Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Marion Nessel. I'm the Paulette Goddard Professor of Nutrition, Food Studies, and Public Health at New York University and a longtime fan of Heritage Radio.
Like Marion, you too can support Heritage Radio Network, a member-based nonprofit radio station operating out of Bushwick, Brooklyn.
I've been on it countless times. I love being interviewed. The interviewers are always really well prepared and fun to talk to about the issues that matter to me the most, about how we can change our food system to one that's healthier for people and the environment. It's just invaluable to have an independent radio station that's dealing with these issues. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful asset.
Support Heritage Radio Network by becoming a member today. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the beating heart to donate.
Today's program is brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com.
This is Michael Harlan Turkel, host of The Food Scene. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
You're listening to Eat Your Words on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kathy Irway. This week, we're talking about some developments in the world of GMO, just to start off the convo. Food labeling has had so many faces lately over the past few months, from labeling of, gluten-free over the years and so forth. But GMO labeling, we're about to see a lot more of. The Senate just passed a bill. It gave the okay to label GMO on food products. And, when you do that, it sort of carries a certain stigma. And there has been some pushback against a growing vocal course of thought of critics about how GMO is misunderstood. So, it has some good points and some bad points. It's helped to, revitalize, crops that are failing, and countries like golden rice was one example that's pulled out a lot, that has more vitamins than other, main commodity crops. So it's a very, very complicated issue. And slapping on a label that says no GMO is going to satisfy some people, and it's going to lead to, I hope, a lot more understanding on the topic. We're not talking about GMOs the whole episode, though. I have a great guest on. It's Chef Tyler Court of Number 7 Sub and Number 7 Restaurant here in Brooklyn. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Now, I'm curious, though, because, when consumer demand changes and preferences change, do you see things like people asking about GMO in your line of work at all?
No, honestly, nobody ever asks. Yeah. But it sounds like something that people might start asking about.
Yeah, and once we see these on labels of all sorts of food products, it should be interesting to see where that goes.
Yeah, I'm curious too, because it seems like such a vague, like just GMO, like right. Being kind of for or anti-GMO feels like you're like for or against like science. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like there's good uses and there's bad uses. And I think we need to maybe get a little more specific
about
it.
Yeah, that's the debate.
But I also don't want to like come in and say I'm super pro GMO because...
Exactly. Yeah, it doesn't sound good, right? It doesn't sound very natural or wholesome. Yeah. It doesn't have that ring of, which is what you might want to identify with.
Sure.
Having like clean products.
Like feeding
or something.
People.
Right,
they
right.
kind of want to know that they're eating
But
real
as
food.
Of now, you wouldn't have much way of knowing for certain which ingredients are and aren't GMO.
That is correct.
Yeah. So.
So soon we'll know. But again, like, but what is that? It doesn't necessarily mean just because something is labeled as GMO, I guess we could stop using it.
Okay.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's a bad. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's full of pesticide. It means that it's been.
Yeah, you know,
I don't know. It just seems so vague right now.
More and more, I think this is actually starting to parallel the labeling of organic. You know,
yeah, just like organic doesn't necessarily mean to me that something is better. I mean, I guess it just means that it doesn't have certain things in it. But it sounds like the process to make something, to get something labeled as organic, is so arduous and crazy.
It is crazy
that there's lots of great products out there that aren't labeled organic. So I don't necessarily look for the organic thing. Also, because for whatever reason, the packaging on organic things usually looks gross. So I don't use. I tend to veer away from the organic things for my own use.
Whereas some things that are packaged, there is no packaging. There's no like branding around things that are totally organic or like has dirt covered on it. And it's like
sure. Yeah, I don't know. I don't stress about that kind of stuff. But that's as like a if I'm in any way an authority on food, which I highly doubt that I am. But if I am, I don't want to be the dude that's like, don't worry about it. Just eat whatever you want, because I don't want to be on the wrong side of history when it turns out that these GMOs actually are killing us. Like I don't know. Mm-hmm. So I guess in my own personal life, I don't stress about those things. But you know, I'm not going to tell people not to worry about not to only eat organic. Like eat organic if that's what you like.
Well, I'm really curious to see what will happen with, like, you know, it's a public perception war a little bit.
Yeah. I just don't trust hippies with my food.
Well, let's talk about who you do trust.
Not very many people, but Francis Lamb is one of them. Francis Lamb may be the only person I trust anymore.
Francis Lamb, editor-in-chief of Clarkson Potter Cookbooks, good friend of ours here. So we're talking about, I'm holding your wonderful cookbook called A Super Upsetting Cookbook.
He's
about
technically,
sandwiches.
For the record, not the editor-in-chief per se, but
what
he edited
he
my book. I think he's just an associate editor.
Associate editor. Okay. Anyway,
or
Francis Lamb.
Managing editor. I don't remember. He has a fun title, but it's.
Yeah.
He's not the editor-in-chief. I wish he was. I don't know.
Cool. Well, how did you come to start working with Francis? Whose idea, or how did you decide to write this cookbook?
I wanted to write a cookbook because it sounded like fun.
Uh-huh.
And I wrote a really weird proposal that was in and of itself pretty upsetting. And I pitched it around with the help of my agent, Jonah, and nobody wanted to publish it, which was reasonable. It was a crazy idea.
Wow.
But then,
wait. What was the idea originally? Was it?
No, it was for
other?
This book.
Okay, it was super upsetting.
Yeah, they weren't feeling it.
Okay.
But then I had heard. I vaguely knew Francis, and I had heard that he had taken a job at Clarkson Potter, and they had already turned the book down. But I mentioned to my agent that I kind of knew him, and that maybe we should pitch it to him because he might like it. And so we did that, and the rest is
history.
A side note
and
in history.
And now we're holding this lovely book. I keep saying these positive adjectives, but you are insisting that it is super upsetting. So let's backtrack. Like, do you get really worked up and start crying every time you're like cooking a sandwich and it's really,
I do.
Like,
yeah. Yeah. But the book is not necessarily meant to upset you in that way. You know what I mean? Like it's not meant to make you cry all the time.
Why is that?
Why do you
feel upset?
Oh, I don't know. I just, you know, I'm a human being. We've all got things that make
this
us upset.
Personal. Yeah.
Or like most,
I can tell
most things.
This is really like affecting. You wrote in the introduction that one time you were really sick, but you plowed forth and got on the train and
it
went
was much
to work.
More graphic the first time around. Francis made me change it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was gross.
Whoa, okay. So you're horribly
sick. It was
sick.
Upsetting.
You're very upset, and you plowed on to work just because you wanted to make people happy through making sandwiches.
Yeah.
So is this some, like, osmosis of, like, you know, transferring, like, the upset that you... do you, like, kind of karmically cleanse it by making something that makes people happy?
I don't know. I mean, I guess I don't really have a great answer to that. And I think that a small chunk of this book was... In a way, me kind of on paper trying to work out what, I don't know, the idea of like happiness and joy just seems so incredibly fleeting, and I struggle to kind of grasp onto it and figure out what it means. And I don't think I got anywhere closer to figuring that out in this book, other than to say that I think that making other people happy seems like the closest thing that I figured out to like a sense of happiness. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Like mm-hmm. spending all this time making food and then eating it yourself is just less gratifying. I don't know. It can be kind of depressing in the end when you've spent all this time and energy, which is in itself, it's kind of, it can be its own release to mm-hmm. like cook and cook and cook when you're not feeling great. And then, you know, that's something to do to distract yourself from being sad and whatever. But then when you're done, there's kind of that, sometimes that disappointment in, all right, now it's over and, and I just ate that in 10 seconds and now what's next? Whereas, you know, feeding other people or writing a book that makes them laugh or opening a restaurant or what, mm-hmm. you know, like the more kind of outward things seem like that's closer to happiness. I haven't totally figured it out yet. Wow. That maybe that's the next book. I'll have figured it out by then.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, what's art without a sense of pain and sacrifice? I could definitely.
Sure.
Well, I mean, you know, that's what I could sort of gather reading through this book.
I think about it all too much.
There's a lot of charged, you know, passages throughout, and it is, you know, sort of super upsetting, but at the same time, brilliant. And I think that, yeah, your sandwiches. I have to say, you are a sandwich artist.
I was technically one when I worked at a Subway sandwich shop in high school for about a year. I was good. I was really good at it. You had to take a test.
Was that your sandwich training?
Or? It was. Yeah, yeah. You had to put your name tag over the over the part of your shirt that said sandwich artist, and then once you there was a test where the manager would time you and say would just call out like a list of ingredients, and you had, I think it was like, I don't know, 60 seconds or 90 seconds.
Whoa.
Or whatever to make the sandwich, and you did it. And then if you passed the test, then you got to move your name tag down so that you could reveal the sandwich artist that had been hiding underneath all along. And I totally did that.
You nailed it.
Yeah.
Wow.
I did.
Do you still
job.
Make sandwiches with that kind of speed and efficiency? Or
no, now I'm just in the
okay.
way. I try to stay out of the way.
Oh,
the sandwich
okay.
shops.
Got it. Yeah. Well, your sandwiches, your combinations are completely original. You seem to like, you know, eschew the traditional sandwich combinations.
Kind of. But I feel like to some degree I am embracing them just kind of often like tweaking, like swapping ingredients for other ingredients that sound crazy, but that still kind of play a similar role and still kind of make sense.
Yeah. I hear you, because I feel like one thing that you're really known for is making sandwiches from just vegetables. So there's a lot of choices, you know, for people who might be vegetarian.
Sure.
Or just not, but really want something tasty made with vegetables. And that doesn't seem to be a tradition in sandwich, unless it's like PBJ. Like that,
or like
I know
falafel,
of.
Or like eggplant parm, or like there are vegetarian,
sandwich, I guess,
or like a slice of pizza folded over, which is my favorite sandwich of them all. But there's a lot of I think.
Well, not subs. Subs, I don't think there's been a veggie.
Yeah, maybe not. but yeah, I'm not sure why. I think I don't. Mm-hmm. I think people just don't. I don't know. Something happened to the world when all of a sudden, at some point, probably right when they figured out industrial agriculture and kind of mass farming of meat. People just could have meat for every single possible meal,
right.
And they just decided that they needed to do that. But I don't feel that way, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Interestingly, you noted that you might be a vegetarian if it weren't for chicken. Because
yeah, chicken's
chicken
the
is
the best one.
I hear you on that. I rarely see chefs say that, though. So that's really cool to hear that, because
I think they're not supposed to say it.
I know,
I feel like,
right?
They want to say it.
Because like, chicken is sort of like white bread, right, in the culinary.
Sure.
High, you know, echelons.
It's the best, and it takes the most finesse, and like,
doesn't it?
It's
yeah.
just, it's the best. It's
okay,
my favorite.
So what's your favorite chicken sandwich in the world?
What's my favorite chicken sandwich in the world right now?
Because you have a few in here in this book. There's
sure.
the Frito Kid, the Number 7 Club. There's the This Is a Chicken Sandwich,
mm-hmm.
and then there's Sandwiches Fall Apart, which is a curry chicken salad with avocado and yum 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 fried squid.
Yeah. I don't know what my favorite, all of the chicken sandwiches are probably my favorite.
Do you have a new latest crazy invention?
Like the McDonald's chicken sandwich, the
Which,
like fried
the
one.
The grilled or the fried?
The one especially from my childhood where it was like one really big chicken nugget
oh.
on a bun with
yes.
with just like mayonnaise and pickles. That was the greatest.
You know, that's making a huge comeback these days.
So good.
At the, you know, what's it called? Fuku?
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah, except they use thighs, and I don't feel so great about that for some reason.
What about the Shake Shack?
I liked the Shake Shack one, yeah.
Okay. Then there's a Delaney chicken.
I like that one, but they also use the thigh, which, again, which is delicious, but fried chicken thighs, I don't know. I like my legs overcooked.
Okay.
And those are, like, just cooked, and they're super fatty, and it's already fried, and then there's fat on the inside of it, and maybe I don't know.
You think that's too much?
For me.
Yeah. So if you went with a fried chicken sandwich, it's the breast?
Yeah.
Do you pound it?
It depends. Like, the ones that we do at the sandwich shop, we just slice really thin, but that's more of, like, an efficiency thing, because we need to make so many of them so quickly.
Yep,
but if I'm making my own with all the time in the world, then I would probably just leave the breast whole. And
you marinate it or brine it? No. Just good old chicken.
I would just season it real good with some salt and pepper, with just some salt, and then do the flour, milk, flour situation.
Oh, okay. So
I like it super simple.
So, that sounds really good. Let's talk more about sandwiches and some of your favorite combos from Number 7 Sandwich fame right after a quick little commercial break.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. Thank you for listening to this show. In our industrial world of highly processed food and wine, we support the values of Heritage Radio Network. All of us at Cane encourage you to seek out individuality and beauty in everything you eat and drink. To learn more about us, go to cane5.com.
All right, we're chatting with Chef Tyler Cord. He has just published his first cookbook called A Super Upsetting Cookbook About Sandwiches. The strangest title I think I've ever seen in a while. But I think the rest of the book definitely lives up to it. It's just delightfully off-kilter. I hope that's a compliment, because I do mean it like that.
I mean, I didn't just want to write another cookbook.
Right.
Especially not a restaurant cookbook, because those are the worst.
You know, I really appreciate
this is what we eat for family meal, and this is, like, the thought that went into this. I can't read another one.
At a certain point, we've seen a lot, and I've definitely seen a lot of those books come across my shelf. I really like that.
It's like a 25-year-old writing a memoir. You know,
I don't think we need that. It's a little bit, you know, kind of salesy, like, this is our values, and that's great and all, but, like, you're painting this picture perfect image of your restaurant and how great you are with staff and family meal, and, like, it's
but, like, keep your restaurant open for 15 years and then let's talk about it. Ooh. You know what I mean? Like, that's neat.
Well, you definitely get into, like, the voice, even, like, you don't have much personal backstory in this, which is kind of
I don't have a backstory. That's what it is.
Come on now. You studied
at nobody cares. Nobody
French
nobody
Culinary Institute. You were a sous chef at Jean Georges.
Not at Jean Georges restaurant, at
Perry Street. Okay. So you have a French background. You've traveled a lot, right? Because there's a lot of international flavors throughout these sandwiches.
I traveled a lot less than I pretend to have traveled, I suppose.
Yeah. Do you, like, pick up
inspiration? But I read a lot of cookbooks. And
there you go.
Yeah.
You were saying that you recently came back from Italy for a little jaunt.
I went to Italy. It was awesome.
Yeah?
Yeah, I want to live there.
What was the food like? Did you have anything that blew your mind?
You know, the food there is so interesting, and it's kind of, I don't know. It's, I had a lot of great things. I had a lot of great pasta, which is, like, pasta is, like, the course that they make to order, but there's like so many things that it's kind of awesome. There's all these things that are just pre-made and mm-hmm. then you order it and then they hand it to you. And I like room temperature
like what?
Food.
What kind of
like,
stuff?
Like all of the sandwiches and pizza, like at a sit down pizzeria, they're going to make to order. Mm-hmm. But there's the Pizza al Metro all over Rome, which is like their slice joint kind of.
Okay.
Which is like, they make these long
and it's room temp
pizzas and then you order one and then they like, cause I don't speak any Italian. It was all hand gestures, but they cut you off a chunk of it and they weigh it. And then they fold it over and wrap it in paper and hand it to you like a sandwich, which is the greatest because it's just room temperature pizza folded like a sandwich for your convenience.
Nice.
And that's totally awesome. But so I, you know, it was, I'd been there before, but I kind of forgot how, just how little, like how much like just lunch is like, no. If, like, yes, this is the greatest lunch place in Rome. The food, we made all the food this morning. Just have whatever you want. Like, you can look at it all. It's all really pretty. Eat it. I had many mortadella sandwiches that I don't know who made them or when, but they were awesome.
Wow.
And they just wrap it up and hand it to you. Wow. And it's delightful. I feel like if we tried to do that here, like only airports do that here now. The kind of grab and go, like,
yes.
Your sandwich has already been made kind of thing.
Right.
I don't think people respond to that
very well
here. Or
like the stuff at Starbucks and whatnot.
But which is why, like, when you go, when I was looking for restaurants and I would look at like TripAdvisor and like you'd read the reviews and they'd be like, you know, the food here in Rome in general is not as good as the Italian food we get in New Jersey, but like this place is pretty good, which for the record, I kind of get, not because I think that the food in New Jersey is necessarily better than Rome. It's just so different. You know, it's like the kind of the intentions of the chefs there and the like kind of expectations of the locals there are clearly different from
completely
the expectations of Americans. It's totally different. So it was neat. It was interesting. And it's, you know, it's a lot of really simple, awesome stuff. And then just the best pasta that maybe exists in the world.
That's a really interesting point. Yeah. Like the place and time that you're at really affects some, and it changes too. So you've had number 7 for how long now? Like 8?
The restaurant's eight years? Almost 8 years old. Yeah.
Congrats, by the
Thanks.
Way.
Thanks. I'm going to write a book about it next year, probably.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh.
I wouldn't do that. 15 years. That's the mark. Then I'll write the number 7.
You have to write one of those cookbooks that's like, you know, bragging about your family meals and
totally.
So have you seen any changing of clients' expectations in that time?
I think people just generally know a lot more about food than they did 8 years ago, mm-hmm. and a lot more
maybe international food.
I think people mm-hmm. travel more and like know more about the cuisine of Malaysia, you know, like whereas like 8 years ago, I don't know. I feel like there was a lot less like we'd use like makrut lime leaves and people wouldn't know what that was. And now everybody does. And like things have changed, you know?
Yeah. And you have a lot of like,
not so much. I feel like less so with the fishes that are not cod. I feel like people still don't know those very
fishes
well.
Fishes that are not cod.
Yeah. The less overfished
really
ones
point.
Are still hard to sell. But
ooh, what are some fishes that you'd like to push more? But
like when we serve like tilefish or wreckfish mm-hmm, or things like
yeah.
that, it's just, it's harder.
You're
because
like, what?
People don't know what that is and they're not excited about it.
Hmm.
But anyway,
but
I'm sure that'll change soon too. Well, soon it won't matter because there just won't be any cod left anyway. The cod and the tuna will just be gone. And then we could just say like, do you want fish or not? Because this is what's left.
Yeah.
This is all that's left.
Oh my gosh. That's very true. And, or they'll just rename it something else. The tilefish.
Sure. Well, then because Patagonian toothfish.
Something like cod. Yeah.
Is gone now because they called it
Chilean
sea bass. It's just gone. So yeah, totally.
We'll see. So you have like interpretations of stuff, a lot of Asian, you know, ingredients, you know, the general cho sauce that you have and so forth. So I think we've definitely seen a growing awareness around Asian cuisines in the last few. Do you see any like rising star international cuisine lately or up and coming? Can you predict any?
I don't know. I think all food is delicious.
That's true. Okay. So it's summer. We've got a lot of things like peaches now and tomatoes. What would you make a sandwich with
a peach and tomato sandwich sounds pretty good right
really?
Now.
Really? Okay, what would you sauce it up with or how would you sauce it?
I mean, probably a really nice vinaigrette and a lot of salt. Sounds good to me.
Hmm. Nothing
on Wonder Bread.
Wonder Bread. A slice, kind of like a sliver from the peach.
Yeah.
Toss out the vinaigrette.
You know what I was thinking about recently was the notion of a like fruit and vegetable kind of tuna salad. Like not to, like replacing the tuna, but instead of
we were
thinking about like instead of fake meat, because I love fake meat. Mm-hmm. But it's there's that beyond, have you had that Beyond Meat company's chicken? It's like
I haven't had it.
Is chicken.
Okay.
But it's kind of hard to source. It's a little expensive. Anyway, so we were talking about making a chicken salad sandwich with that, and then I was like, what if we shredded a bunch of like awesome different vegetables, like made a melange of vegetables, but then also some like jackfruit, like things that are like chewy and awesome.
Stuff.
But like peaches, peaches are so delicious.
That sounds great.
I bet if you dried them out a little bit so they got a little chewier.
Ooh.
To like give it a nice meatier texture, but then like tossed it with honest like mayonnaise and chopped up pickles and made like a tuna salad sandwich with peaches and like zucchini and eggplant.
Ooh.
I bet that would be pretty awesome.
That's a great idea. Yeah.
Stay tuned. Maybe at the Whole Foods in Williamsburg.
I'm excited. Yeah, because like, you know, you see grapes a lot in chicken salad, but why not peaches?
Delicious. It's
delicious. How would you dry it out though? I'm like trying to scratch
head. Like, I mean, I don't have a fancy
like
food dehydrator,
No.
I mean, like in like a 200 degree oven, like instead, like not roasting it, but also not like
kind of chewing, making it sort of chewy.
Yeah. Like somewhere between dried, not like fruit leather, but like just dry it out enough that it gets a little chewier.
Well, that's a crazy idea.
So it kind of develops a skin on the outside and gets kind of gnarly in a good way.
Right on. So are you trying to play around with more like meatless or fake meat substitutes, as you said?
I'm always looking for fun ways to make food that doesn't have meat in it. Have you ever tried being vegetarian for any length of time?
Yeah.
Because I have done it many times, and I always, the thing I do, like I'm not like meat obsessed and I don't need to have it for every meal, but when I haven't had it for a long time, it turns out I don't want I don't want a broccoli sandwich and I don't want like just whatever vegetable side dishes the restaurant has. I want something that feels like I'm getting like kind of a concentrated pack of protein.
Mm-hmm.
And so like I want a veggie burger at that point or like
a fake meat
or seitan or like those things become much more exciting then.
Mm-hmm.
I know some people, I think it's a thing particularly of chefs who are not vegetarian and don't know much about it, who say things like, oh, well, like we're going to do this vegetarian thing, but we're not going to serve that fake meat because that's disgusting and that's not real food and we're going to use vegetables. But like, try it out. Like you want,
I'm sure,
you want something chewy. Like there's not a lot of chewy that's, if you're going straight up vegetarian, like whole vegetables, like there's just not a lot of chew.
I can see that
and
being tough to plate, though, in a non-sandwich kind of arrangement, you know, because people have expectations on texture and all that stuff. But
right. But like a big chunk of beautifully fried tofu makes like a beautiful centerpiece for a dish.
That's true.
Or a couple of big slices of grilled rutabaga or whatever. You know what I mean? Like you can still have a main component. I think that's the other thing that people get, because like I think people struggle to make vegetables the main focus of a drink, of a dish, without like having it just be like a list of, you know, this plate is this, and that, with this vinaigrette and this sauce and blah, blah, blah. But like, you know, if you cook it right and you grill it or you fry it or you whatever, roast it, you can make anything the star. But it's, so again, like the fake meat stuff is, I don't know, and people make awesome seitan and like tofu rules.
This is so...
I like that stuff.
I love that, you know, you're going all these, you know, really bold places with meat substitutes, because it's something I struggle with, like just at home when I'm just too lazy to get meat or something, and I'm always trying to like, you know, tinker around with whatever veggies.
I want to get a hold of the stuff that have you ever had? I always saw that there was like a whole vegetarian fake meat section on like a lot of Chinese restaurants menus.
Buddha food,
and I started, but not the like virtuous Buddha stuff. I mean like General Tso's soy protein, which I don't actually know what that is. I mean, I eat it all the time because it's delicious, but one of these days I want to find out what that is and buy it. But it's like this like chewy chicken, like crunchy, awesome thing that they dunk in General Tso's sauce. And it's so good. I want to find it. I'm sure it's terrible for you, but
It's not wheat gluten, like, which is...
It's not seitan.
It's not seitan.
It's a different, it's like a spongier, different texture. I don't know how to describe it.
It's amazing what you can do with, like, you know, just a few proteins, like...
Sure.
Bean curd. It comes in many different forms. That's why I think, like, tofu has a stigma, because people think it's just, like, this one-dimensional, like, one type.
Yeah, you know? So they think that of tofu, and then they hear seitan, and they're like, oh, it's that processed, like, mm-hmm. vegan, whatever. But it's just dough. Like, it's just wheat gluten. It's like a wheat dough that they rinsed all the starch out of, and you're left with the protein, and they cook it. There's like, it's not any more processed. It's in fact probably much less processed than like Purdue chickens that you buy.
So say we have a beautiful slab of tofu right now. What's the best sandwich combination for that, given the season and I don't know, peaches and whatnot that are around?
I mean, I admittedly much prefer tofu to be fried.
Okay.
So the first thing I would do is probably bread it and fry it.
Bread
Although
it
lately
fry.
I've actually, and I'm going to work
Get
on it
crispy.
In the next couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try to make a, because like everybody's so excited about Nashville hot chicken these days. And I want to make the tofu version of Nashville, like Nashville hot tofu.
Okay. Sounds good.
But anyway, so I would like fry it in like a hot sauce enriched batter,
nice.
Maybe.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, serve it with some awesome fruity coleslaw.
Okay.
Maybe some pickles.
Coleslaw. Sounds good. A little tartar, yeah. maybe, action?
Sure.
Oh, my God. Now I'm really hungry. Well, I guess that's about all the time we have for today. But thank you so much, Chef Tyler, for joining us.
Thanks for having me. You can just call me Tyler. It's okay.
Okay, Chef. everyone check out A Super Upsetting Cookbook About Sandwiches out from Clarkson Potter. And check out Number 7 Sub. There's a new one coming out in Williamsburg at the Whole Foods. So that should be a fun grand opening. When is that grand opening again?
Soon. It's in a few weeks. Two, 3 weeks. I think it's like the 25th.
Nice.
And that one's going to be all vegetarian. Just,
oh, really?
Just to make things exciting.
Wow. All right. I might have to go shopping at Whole Foods more. all right. Well, thanks so much, Tyler. Thanks, everyone at Heritage. We'll see you next week on Eat Your Words.
Ooh, I like the way you do.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
So good inside.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.